Right, believable thing for me to do.
I'm not letting you in. Not this time. You are a scoundrel.
Wayne sighed. Heroes and stories never had to fight the same beast twice. Seemed unfair he had to face this one each month.
Look, I just want to check in on her.
She is fine.
I have money, Wayne said, to give her.
You can leave it here. You distress the girl, miscreant.
Wayne stepped forward, taking the tyrant by the shoulder.
I didn't want to have to do this.
She looked at him, and to his surprise, she cracked her knuckles. Wow. He reached into his pocket quickly and pulled out a piece of pasteboard.
One ticket, Wayne said quickly, admitting two people to the governor's spring dinner and policy speech occurring during a party at Lady Zobel's penthouse tonight. This here ticket lists no specific names. Anyone who has it can get in.
Her eyes widened.
Who'd you steal that from?
Please, Wayne said. It came delivered to my house.
Which was perfectly true. It was for Wax and Steris. But they were important enough folk that invitations sent to them had no names, so they could send an emissary if they wished. When it came to someone fancy like Wax, even getting their relative or friend to attend your party could be advantageous. The tyrant didn't count as either. But Wayne figured that Wax would be happy not to have to go to the blasted party anyway. Besides, Wayne had left a real nice-looking leaf he'd found in exchange.
Rusting beautiful, that leaf was.
The tyrant hesitated, so Wayne waved the ticket in front of her.
I guess, she said, I could let you in one last time. I'm not supposed to allow unrelated men into the visiting room, however.
I'm practically family, he said.
They made a big fuss about keeping the young women and the young men separated around here, which Wayne found odd. With all of these smart people around, wouldn't one of them have realized what boys and girls were supposed to do together? The tyrant let him pass into the visiting room, then sent one of the girls at the desk to run for Alejandra. Wayne sat down, but couldn't keep his feet from tapping. He'd been stripped of weapons, bribes, and even his own hat. He was practically naked. But he'd made it to the final test. Alejandra entered a few moments later. She'd brought backup with her in the form of two other young ladies about her age, just shy of 20.
Smart girl, Wayne thought, proud.
He rose.
Madame Penfor says you're drunk,
Alejandra said, remaining in the doorway. Wayne tapped his metal mind, drawing forth healing. In a moment, his body burned away its impurities and healed its wounds. It thought alcohol was a poison, which showed that a fellow couldn't always trust his own body, but today he didn't complain. It also washed away his sniffles for the moment, though those would return. It was hard to heal from diseases with a metal mind, for some reason. Either way, sobriety hit him like a brick to the chin. He inhaled deeply, feeling even more naked than before.
Oh, I just like to play with her,
Wayne said, all hint of slur gone from his voice, eyes focused. Alejandra studied him intently, then nodded. She did not enter the room.
I brought this month's money,
Wayne said, taking an envelope out and setting it on the low, glass-topped table beside him. He stood up straight, then shuffled from one foot to the other.
Is that really him?
One of the girls asked Alejandra.
They say he rides with Dawnshot, of the Ruffs.
It's him,
Alejandra said, eyes still on Wayne.
I don't want your money.
Your mama told me to bring it to you,
Wayne said.
You don't need to bring it in person.
I do,
Wayne said quietly. They stood in silence, neither party moving. Wayne finally cleared his throat.
How are your studies? Are you treated well here? Is there anything you need?
Alejandra reached into her handbag and took out a large locket. She spread it open, displaying a strikingly distinct Ivanotype of a man with a wide mustache and a twinkle in his eyes. He had a long, friendly face, and his hair was thinning on top. Her father. She made Wayne look at it every time.
Tell me what you did,
she said. that voice. It could have been the voice of winter itself. Or don't tell me. The third trial. I killed your daddy, Wayne said softly, looking at the picture. I mugged him in an alley for his pocketbook. I shot a better man than me, and because of that I don't deserve to be alive.
You know you aren't forgiven.
I know.
You will never be forgiven.
I know.
Then I'll take your blood money, Alejandra said. If you care to know, my studies go well. I am thinking of taking up the law.
Someday, he hoped he might be able to look into the girl's eyes and see emotion. Hatred, maybe. Something other than emptiness.
Get out.
Wayne ducked his head and left. There should not have been a thatched log hut in the middle of Ellendale, and yet here it was. Wax stooped to enter, seeming to step backward in time hundreds of years. The air inside smelled of old leather and furs. The enormous fire pit in the middle would never be needed in Ellendale's mild weather. Today, a smaller fire had been constructed at its very center, and over it simmered a small kettle of hot water for tea. However, charred stones indicated that the entire fire pit was sometimes used. It, the furs, the ancient-style paintings on the wall, of winds and frozen rain, and tiny figures painted with simple strokes on slopes, were all fragments of a myth. Old Terrace, a legendary land of snow and ice, with white-furred beasts and spirits that haunted frozen storms. During the early days following the Catasandra, refugees from Terrace had written down memories of their homeland, as no keepers had remained. Wax settled down beside his grandmother's fire pit. Some said that old Terrace waited for this people, hidden somewhere in this new world of Harmony's design. To the faithful, it might as well have been paradise. A frozen, hostile paradise. Living in a land naturally lush with bounteous fruit, where little cultivation was required, could warp one's vision. Grandmother V settled down opposite him, but did not start the fire.
"Did you remove your guns before entering the village this time?"
"I did not," she snorted.
"So insolent." "During your long absence, I often wondered if the roughs might temper you."
"They made me more stubborn, is all."
"A land of heat and death," Grandmother V said.
She crinkled a handful of herbs, flakes dropping into a tea strainer above her cup. She poured steaming water over them, then placed the lid with a gnarled hand.
"Everything about you stinks of death, Asinthu."
"That isn't what my father named me."
"Your father didn't have the right. I would demand you remove your weapons, but it would be meaningless. You could kill with a coin, or with a button, or with this pot."
"Elemancy is not so evil as you make it out to be, Grandmother."
"Neither power is evil," she said. "It is mixing those powers that is dangerous. Your nature is not your fault, but I cannot help but see it as a sign. Another tyrant in our future, too powerful. It leads to death."
Sitting in this hut, the scent of grandmother's tea, memories grabbed Wax by his collar and shoved him face first up against his past. A young man who had never been able to decide what he was. Alamancer or ferrochemist, city lord, or humble terraceman. His father and uncle pushing him one way, his grandmother another. "A ferrochemist slaughtered people in the fourth octant last night, Grandmother," Wax said. "He was a steel runner. I know you track everyone in the city with ferrochemical blood. I need a list of names." Grandmother V swished around her tea.
"You visited the village on, what, a mere 3 occasions since your return to the city? Nearly 2 years, and you've made time for your grandmother only twice before today.
Can you blame me, considering how these meetings usually go? To be blunt, Grandmother, I know how you feel about me. So why torture either of us?
You cling to your images of me from 2 decades ago, child. People change, even one such as I.
She sipped her tea, then added more herbs to the strainer and lowered it back into the water. She would not drink until it was right.
Not one such as you, it appears.
Trying to bait me, Grandmother?
No, I am better at insults than that. You haven't changed. You still don't know who you are.
An old argument. She'd said it to him both times they'd met during the last 2 years. I'm not going to start wearing terrace robes, speaking softly, quoting proverbs at people.
You will shoot them instead.
Wax took a deep breath. A mixture of scents lingered in the air. From the tea? Scents like that of freshly cut grass. His father's estates, sitting on the lawn, listening to his father and grandmother argue. Wax had lived here in the village for only a single year. It had been all his father had agreed to give. Even that had been surprising. Uncle Edwarn had wanted Wax and his sister to both stay away from the place. Before his official heir, the late Hinston Ladrian, had been born when Wax was 18, Edwarn had basically appropriated his brother's children and tried to raise them. Even still, it was hard to separate Wax's parents' will in his head from that of Edwarn. 1 year among these trees. Wax had been forbidden alomancy during his days in the village, but had learned something far greater. That criminals existed, even among the idyllic terrace. The only times I've truly known who I am, Wax said, looking up at his grandmother, meeting her eyes, are when I've put on the mist coat, strapped guns to my waist, and hunted down men gone rabid.
You should not be defined by what you do, but by what you are.
A man is what he does.
You came looking for a ferrochemist killer? You need only look in the mirror, child. If a man is what he does, think of what you've done.
I've never killed a man who didn't deserve it.
Can you be absolutely certain of that?
Reasonably. If I've made mistakes, I'll pay for them someday. You won't distract me, Grandmother. To fight is not against the terrace way. Harmony killed.
He slew beasts and monsters only. Never our own.
Wax breathed out. This again? Rusts, I should have forced Wayne to come here instead of me. He says she actually likes him. A new scent struck him. Crushed blossoms. In the darkness of that chamber, he imagined himself again standing among the trees of the terrace village, looking up at a broken window and feeling the bullet in his hand. And he smiled. Once that memory had brought him pain, the pain of isolation. Now he saw only a budding lawman, remembered the sense of purpose he'd felt. Wax stood up, grabbing his hat, mistcoat rustling. He almost wanted to believe that the sense to the room, the memories, were his grandmother's doing. Who knew what she put into that tea? I'm going to hunt down a murderer, Wax said. If I do it without your help and he kills again before I can stop him, you will be partially to blame. See how well you sleep at night then, grandmother.
Will you kill him? She asked. Will you shoot for the chest when you could aim for the leg? People die around you. Do not deny it.
I don't, he said. A man should never pull a trigger unless he's willing to kill. And if the other fellow is armed, I'm going to aim for the chest. That way, when people do die around me, it's the right ones. Grandmother V stared at her teapot.
The one you're looking for is named Idashwi. And she is not a man.
Steel Runner?
Yes. She is not a killer. But She is the only steel runner I know of who could possibly be involved in something like this. She vanished about a month ago, after acting very erratically. Claimed that she was being visited by the spirit of her dead brother.
Adeshwi, he said. It was pronounced in the terrace manner. The syllables felt thick in his mouth, another reminder of his days in the village. The terrace language had been dead once, but Harmony's records included it, and many terrace now learned to speak it in their youths. I swear I know that name.
You did know her. Long ago, Grandmother V said. You were with her that night, actually, before.
Ah, yes. Slender, golden hair, shy, and didn't speak much. I didn't know she was a ferrochemist.
You don't even have the decency to look ashamed, Grandmother B said.
I'm not, Wax said. Hate me if you must, Grandmother, but coming to live with you changed my life, just as you always promised it would. I'm not going to be ashamed that the transformation wasn't the one you expected.
Just try to bring her back, Asinthu. She's not a killer. She's confused.
They all are, Wax said, stepping out of the hut. The three men from before stood outside, glaring at him with displeasure. Wax tipped his hat to them, dropped a coin, then launched himself into the air between two trees, passing their canopies and seeking the sky. Each time Maracy entered the precinct offices, she got a little thrill. It was the thrill of bucked expectations, of a future denied. Even though this room didn't look like she'd imagined, as the clerical and organizational center for the Octans constables, it felt more like a business office than anything else. The mere fact that she was here excited her. This wasn't supposed to have been her life. She'd grown up reading stories of the roughs, of lawmen and villains. She'd dreamed of six guns and stagecoaches. She'd even taken up horseback riding and rifle shooting. And then, real life had intervened. She'd been born into privilege. Yes, she was illegitimate, but the generous stipend from her father had set her and her mother up in a fine home. Money for an education had been guaranteed for her. With that kind of promise, and with her mother's determination that Maracy should enter society and prove herself to her father, one did not choose a profession so lowly as that of a constable. Yet, here she was. It was wonderful. She passed through the room full of people at desks. Though a jail was attached to the building, it had its own entrance, and she rarely visited it. Many of the constables she passed on her way through the main chamber were the type who spent most of their days at a desk. Her own spot was a comfortable nook near Captain Aradel's office. His room felt like a closet inside, and Aradel rarely spent time there. Instead, he stalked through the main chamber like a prowling lion, always in motion. Maracy set her handbag on her desk next to a stack of last year's crime reports. In her spare time, she was trying to judge to what extent petty crimes in a region foretold greater ones. Better that than reading the politely angry letters from her mother, which lay underneath. She peeked into the captain's office and found his waistcoat thrown across his desk, right beside the pile of expense reports he was supposed to be initialing. She smiled and shook her head, dug his pocket watch out of his waistcoat, then went hunting. The offices were busy, but they didn't have the bustle of the prosecutor's offices. During her internship there, beneath dais, everyone had always seemed so frantic. People worked all hours, and when a new case was posted, every junior solicitor in the room rushed over in a flurry of papers, coats, and skirts, craning to see who had posted the case and how many assistants they would be taking. The opportunities for prestige, and even wealth, had been bountiful, and yet she hadn't been able to shake the feeling that nobody was actually doing anything. Cases that could make a difference languished because they weren't high-profile enough, while anything under the patronage of a prominent lord or lady was seen to immediately. The rush had been less about fixing the city's problems and more about making certain the senior solicitors saw how much more eager you were than your colleagues. She'd probably still be there if she hadn't met Waxillium. She'd have done as her mother wanted, seeking validation through her child. Proof, perhaps, that she could have married Lord Harms, if it had been in the cards, despite her low birth. Marcy shook her head. She loved her mother, but the woman simply had too much time on her hands. The constable's offices were so different from the solicitor's. Here there was a true sense of purpose, but it was measured, even thoughtful. Constables leaned back in chairs and described evidence to other officers looking for help on a case. Junior corporals moved through the room, delivering cups of tea, fetching files, or running some other errand. The competition she'd felt among the solicitors barely existed here. Perhaps that was because there was little prestige and even less wealth to go around. She found Aradel with sleeves rolled up, one foot on a chair, bothering Lieutenant Cabarrow.
No, Aradel said. I'm telling you, we need more men on the streets, near the pubs at nights, where the foundry workers congregate after the strike line breaks up. Don't bother guarding them during the day.
Cabarrow nodded placidly, though she gave Marcy a roll of the eyes as she walked up. Aradel did tend to micromanage, but at least he was earnest. In Marcy's experience, they were almost all fond of him, eye rolls notwithstanding. She plucked a cup of tea off the plate of a passing corporal who was delivering them to the desks. He quickly moved on, eyes forward, but she could almost feel him glaring at her. Well, it wasn't her fault she'd landed this position and the rank of lieutenant without ever having to deliver tea.
All right, she admitted to herself, sipping the tea and stepping up beside Aradel. Maybe there is a bit of competition around here.
You'll see this done, then? Aradel asked.
Of course, sir, Cabarrow said.
She was one of the few in the place who treated Marcy with any measure of respect. Perhaps it was because they were both women. There were fewer women in the constabulary than among the solicitors. One might have guessed that the reason for this was that ladies weren't interested in the violence, but having done both jobs, Marcy felt she knew which profession was bloodier, and it wasn't the one where people carried guns.
Good, good, Aradel said. I have a debriefing with Captain Reddy
He patted at his pocket. Marcy held out his watch, which he grabbed and checked for the time.
15 minutes. Huh, more time than I expected. Where'd you get that tea, Combs?
Want me to have someone fetch you some? She asked.
No, I can do it.
He bustled off, and Marcy nodded to Cabarrow, then hurried after him.
Sir, she said, have you seen the afternoon broadsheets?
He held out his hand, which she filled with paper. He held up the stack of broadsheets and almost ran over 3 different constables on his way to the stove and the tea.
Bad,
he muttered.
I'd hoped they'd spin this against us.
Us, sir?
Marcy asked, surprised.
Sure, he said. Nobleman dead, constables not giving the press details. This reads like they started to pin the death on the constables, but then changed their minds. By the end, the tone is far more outraged against Winsting than us.
And that's worse than outrage at us for a cover-up?
Far worse, Lieutenant, he said with a grimace, reaching for a cup. People are used to hating Connors. We're a magnet for it, a lightning rod. Better us than the governor.
Unless the governor deserves it, sir.
Dangerous words, Lieutenant,
Aradel said, filling his cup with steaming tea from the large urn kept warm atop the coal stove.
And likely inappropriate.
You know there are rumors that he's corrupt, Marcy said softly.
What I know is that we are civil servants, Aradel said. There are enough people out there with the mindset and the moral position to monitor the government. Our job is to keep the peace.
Marcy frowned, but said nothing. Governor Innate was corrupt. She was almost sure of it. There were too many coincidences, too many small oddities in his policy decisions. It wasn't by any means obvious, but trends were Marcy's specialty and her passion. It wasn't as if she'd wanted to discover that the leader of Ellendel was trading favors with the city's elite, but once she'd spotted the signs, she'd felt compelled to dig in. On her desk, carefully hidden under a stack of ordinary reports, was a ledger in which she'd assembled all the information. Nothing concrete, but the picture it drew was clear to her, even though she understood that it would look innocent to anyone else. Aradel studied her.
You disagree with my opinion, Lieutenant?
One doesn't change the world by avoiding the hard questions, sir.
Feel free to ask them, then. In your head, Lieutenant, and not out loud, particularly not to people outside the precinct. We can't have the men we work for thinking we are trying to undermine them.
Funny, sir, Maracy said. I thought we worked for the people of the city, not their leaders.
Aradel stopped, cup of steaming tea halfway to his lips.
Suppose I deserve that, he said,
then took a gulp, shaking his head. He didn't flinch at the heat. People in the office figured he'd seared his taste buds off years ago.
Let's go.
They wove through the room toward Aradel's office, passing Captain Reddy at his desk. The lanky man rose, but Aradel waved him down, pulling out his watch.
I still have 5 minutes until I have to deal with you, Reddy.
Maracy shot the captain an apologetic smile. She got a scowl in return.
Someday, she noted, I'm going to figure out why that man hates me.
Hmm?
Aradel said.
Oh, you stole his job.
Maracy missed a step, stumbling into Lieutenant Alstrom's desk.
What? She demanded, hurrying after Aradel. Sir?
Reddy was going to be my assistant, Aradel said as they reached his office. Had a damn fine bid for the job. I was all but priced into hiring him, until I got your application.
Maracy blushed deeply.
Why would Reddy want to be your assistant, sir? He's a field constable, a senior detective.
Everyone has this idea that in order to move up, you need to spend more time in the office and less on the street, Aradel said. Stupid tradition, even if the other octants follow it. I don't want my best men and women turning into desk slugs. I want the assistant position to be for nurturing someone fresh, who shows promise, rather than letting some practiced constable gather moss.
The realization made a lot of things lock into place for Maracy. The hostility she felt from many of the others wasn't just because she'd skipped the lower ranks. Many with noble titles did that. It was because they'd solidified behind Reddy, their friend, who'd been slighted.
So,
Maracy said, taking a deep breath and grasping for something to keep her from a panic,
you think I show promise, then?
Of course I do. Why would I have hired you otherwise?
Corporal Maindew walked by, saluting, and Aradel threw the wadded broadsheets into his face.
No saluting indoors, Maindew. You'll knock yourself unconscious slapping your forehead every time I walk past.
He glanced back at Maracy as Maindew mumbled an apology and rushed off.
There's something in you, Combs, Aradel told her. Not the gloss and glint of the application. I don't care about your grades or what those zinc tongues in the solicitor's office thought of you. The words you wrote about changing the city, they made sense. They impressed me.
Thank you for the praise, sir.
I'm not flattering you, Combs. It's just a fact.
He pointed toward the door.
That broadsheet said the governor was going to address the city later this afternoon. I'll bet the second octant constables ask us for help managing the crowds. They always do. So I'm going to send a street detail. Go with them and listen. Then report back to me what Governor Innate says. And pay attention to how the crowd reacts.
Yes, sir,
Maracy said, stopping herself from saluting as she snatched her handbag and ran to follow the orders. Upper left quadrant of the broadsheet, The House Record. The Journal of Civilization, Society, and Culture. First of Doxel, number 342. Morning edition. Copyright, 342. Lassan Kalour and Daughters and Sons. Market opening, EBSE stocks, plus 0.5. Commodities, down 2.1. Gentleman Jack, in the City of Fountains, Part 6, The Sinister Soiree. I need not remind my astute readers of the precarious situation in which I was left at the end of last week's column. But for those of you whose heightened tastes have just now led them from the gutters of disgraceful journalism to the noble pages of the House Record, let me present a short recapitulation.